And for the transcript, this is Tuesday, November 19. Registrar's stakeholder group. Material C. 3:30 p.m. And this will be the local law versus ICANN contractual terms session from 3:30 to 4 p.m.
Okay, everybody, if you could please take your seats, we're going to continue our wonderfully exciting afternoon's activities. There are seats available at the table, there are microphones, there's even water down the back of the room. Woohoo! Okay, the topic we're going to be discussing now was actually going to be probably a couple of topics. On your agenda is local law versus ICANN contracts, and I've just been informed that Mr. Zupke has an update for us.
So, thank you. It's Mike Zupke. I didn't mean to preempt the discussion. I think that if there's feedback, you know, we do want that. You know, I heard this morning kind of a general sense of frustration about the amount of time that it's taken to get a response and maybe a difference in understanding of what ICANN's expectations were in the first place. So I kind of went through some of what we've received and some of what we've sent back to registrars, trying to see, you know, what exactly... you know, why do we have this problem? Why are people frustrated? So, talked to Caitlin, who is, you know, as I mentioned, is kind of managing the intake of these things, and to Cyrus a little bit. And so we've got some ideas about how we can try to make this a little bit better for registrars. So having not heard yet the specific complaints, if I'm understanding them correctly, I'd be happy to tell you sort of what we've got in mind in terms of process improvements. And first is, I think, you know, making sure that registrars understand what it is ICANN is looking for is probably the number one key, so that you don't spend a lot of time and resources in doing what you think we want, only to find out, you know, after some amount of time that it's not actually what we wanted. So we've got, in general, we've got an FAQ document that Caitlin's been putting together based on the RAA questions that we receive. And so she has included in that some information about the waiver requests also, and about how registrars can better respond to the questions in the application in a way that's in line with what ICANN's expecting. We also have discussed, I think, doing just kind of a quickie webinar on the topic, so that people who are still in the process of doing the application can tune in and kind of hear, you know, what we've learned so far, and then ask their questions. And we'll try and get time when some of our lawyers can be on the call too to help answer any questions that there might be for them. And then the third thing really relates to the timing that it's taking to process these. And so, you know, I wish I could say, you know, exactly, I know how every minute is being spent on these, and that, you know, there's ways we can try to compress that. And I don't have that level of detail. But what we have decided, at least we can do, you know, our team, you know, meaning the DNS engagement, the, you know, from Cyrus and Tim and me and Caitlin and others who are involved in this, is that we want to make sure that the people who are actually doing the reviews, whether it's our inside counsel or outside counsel, have a better understanding of the importance and priority of this, so that you know, they don't think this is, you know, just some kind of stray thing that can sit around, but that you know, we want registrars on the new RAA. We want them in compliance with the agreement. We want them in compliance with their local law. You know, we don't want anybody to start off in a position of set up to fail. So we're going to try to set some regular process internally where we review every application on a periodic basis, whether it's weekly or every other week, so that we can make sure that nothing is sitting or being overlooked, or if there are some, you know, minor issues in applications, that we can all sort of agree to how to resolve those quickly, instead of having them kind of get batched up with other ones that might have more complicated things. So that's the good news. And now, if people would like to complain about what they've experienced so far, I'd be happy to turn off my microphone and listen.
Thank you, Mike. I'm just going to throw this open. Do any registrars here have any comments, positive, negative? I'm going to pick on Volker.
Not too concerned. I still have till September to do that for my main registrar.
Sorry?
We have adopted a wait-and-see approach for this matter, as it's not as urgent for us as for other registrars. Furthermore, we believe that the severability clause already provides sufficient protection for us, not requiring the actual issue of a waiver after it has been requested.
Okay, could you explain about the severability clause for those of us who don't speak fluent lawyer?
Basically, the RAA contains a provision that states that in case anything in the RAA conflicts with local law, that would not apply to that registrar. So because the registrar is required to follow local law, in data retention requirements that would violate local law would not be applicable to that registrar. While we have a formal procedure to formalize this with the waiver process, I do not believe a waiver would actually be required once ICANN has been informed of such conflicts.
So you're basically saying that ICANN should grant all registrars a blanket exemption?
I think they already have.
Mike?
Right, so obviously, I can't just on the spot say we agree with that position. And frankly, I mean, the contract itself sets out a waiver process, so we're going to continue to follow that. But if you've got, the process allows for you to submit interpretive information or whatever. So I think, that might be a conversation we can talk about offline a little bit. I'm happy to hear you out. But at least in the near term, our plan is to continue with the waiver request process that's described in the agreement.
Does anybody else want to weigh in on this topic? Okay. I don't know if is Tom Keller here? Do you have any thoughts, Tom?
Not to put you on the spot.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts. What I'm referring to exactly? I wasn't
okay. So, translation. Tom was doing something else. We're talking about the data retention and the waiver process, and there is a view being expressed by some people that it shouldn't apply at all, and that the entire waiver process itself is flawed because there's already a provision within the contract. Which would negate the entire thing to begin with, or worse to that effect?
Well, actually, that has been our belief for quite some time already. And I'm not a lawyer, but we kind of looked into that, and what we found is exactly that. So I would go along with that.
Okay. I think this is one we're going to have to continue. I suppose one thing, Mike, that we are very conscious of is with respect to timing, that ICANN staff may in good faith be offering to continue dialogues and everything else, but we have registries wanting to offer new extensions and they want to do it now, and registrars who feel that they cannot sign the 2013 contract without getting a waiver are being put at a disadvantage.
Yeah, and so what I hope you're hearing is we are sympathetic to what you're saying, and we're trying to figure out the quickest way to get you in business.
I'm going to hand over to Jennifer as my laptop just died.
Are there any other questions or comments or concerns about that topic? Do we have somebody on remote? No.
That I would prefer they didn't take the discussion offline if it is the case that we can rely on the existing provision as it affects all of us. That's from Kelly Salter, and Luke agrees. So
So this is Mike again. I wish we could. I'm just not prepared to have the conversation now, but I'm sure we can do it in a more public way. It doesn't have to be just, you know, Mike and Volker in the hallway talking. But I just mean that, you know, we're not prepared today to talk about it. But I'm happy to open it up when we have more information to talk about that.
So can you commit to a time frame in which you believe that you could come back and present to the registrar stakeholder through a conference call or webinar?
So the webinar that we're planning, the mini one about what we expect in terms of the waiver and how to do that, that we're planning to do by the end of the year, and we'll advertise that through the normal channel, the registrar mailing list. In terms of the issue that Volker and others have raised, I think I need to get more information from them first in order to figure out what we would need to do to consider the question. It could be that we may have, and I don't know if we've got any of the council in the room, but it may be this has been considered and they already know the answer is one thing or another. But I can't give you a time frame on that. But, I think if we can, I mean, obviously we want to deal with it sooner rather than later. And with our office, closing toward the end of the year with the last week of the year off, I think really the pressure is on to do this as quickly as we can. So I'll do my best.
So I'll take it as the action item that the SG will get back to you to provide you with more details. And based upon that, hopefully you'll be able to address it in the end of the year webinar.
So if you can get us more details, then, absolutely, of course, we'll get back to you. Whether it'll be in time for the webinar or not, I don't know. I think we're going to try and get to that as quickly as we can, because I know that there's frustration with the process that we want to try and alleviate quickly, so that if there are people who are kind of standing back and waiting to submit their applications, they'll have more information so that they can feel more confident in submitting them.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Just before we move on to another topic, it has been brought to our attention that there's been a number of incidents near the venue where people have been accosted and mugged. So just to give people a general warning, I don't know, Mason sent an email around to the XCOM there about that a short time ago. So just be careful. We had a couple of other topics we wanted to discuss very briefly before we meet with the registries. So one of them was we've been having a discussion on the list around the dot brand applicants and them looking for certain exemptions. I don't know who wants to lead that discussion. I don't know, James or Ben or somebody.
I actually thought Matt was going. Is Matt still here?
Matt has vanished.
Okay. Well, my question was, someone I think needs to help me understand why the general RA is insufficient for the particular needs of brands. And the only one I really get is the idea that redelegating a brand is a problem. So if Matt's not here, I guess we'll have to defer. I guess that's my question, is why are all the other things necessary?
Fred?
I share some of Matt's opinion on this thing, because I do some consulting for dot brands. So one of the things that was annoying for them is to have to offer equal opportunity to every registrar, because at some point they will only use one registrar. So, for example, that means if they want to sell their domain name, then they would have to, if you apply to be accredited with them, they would have to accept you, even if they have already their registrar. So it would be a hassle for them to manage accreditations of multi-registrars if they use only one.
But if they vertically integrate with their own registrar, then they don't have to do that. But they're saying they want to have the benefits of vertical integration without the hassle of owning a registrar, sort of.
Yeah, for example, let's take an example. Company A is doing is the .a, and they want to have 100 domain names, 500 domain names, only for them, for themselves, and they will use only one registrar, which is the registrar which already manages their portfolio. So they don't want to have to accredit a new registrar, which is what the contract asks them to do. So you can find a way to, you know, go around that and say, okay, I will have some very complicated rules for accreditation, but what's the point of doing that when you can just say, okay, there's going to be only one owner, one registrant for all the domain names of this .a, so let's have an exception.
I'm a little nervous that we're kind of, I feel, late in the game changing something that was very, very highly debated, the vertical integration piece, or at least it touches on this issue, and I think that it's concerning that it just makes me uncomfortable because I don't know what the possible consequences are. And then, you know, I feel like we would do something and then, you know, like we all got some surprise news today that, you know, there's some interesting things going on, and then we find out later that, oh, well, when we got the brands, these special powers and special agreements, that's when they started doing these other things, you know, and maybe just nervous, but Matt is here. Maybe Matt can help address some of the questions. Hey, we're on your topic, Matt, of .brand.
James, request. It's Ben here.
Yeah, and Ben. Hey, Ben, go ahead.
It's not about vertical integration, allowing a brand to have its own registrar. I think if you look at it, each of the .brand applicants will be... Thanks, Matt. Each of the .brand applicants are going to be applying for these same exemptions over and over again in the registry agreement. So the removal of specification 9, so the code of conduct, each will ask for that. So this is just taking a standard approach to the things that every single .brand is going to ask in their contract negotiations with ICANN. And look, Martin's just walked in as well, so he can explain even more. I think that's the point. It's about giving the brands a standardized contract so they don't have to go and negotiate each time and ask for exactly the same things.
Yeah, sorry, just to pick up on what Ben said, this is Matt. So, you know, I think everyone recognizes the practice and how brands are going to operate with single registrar models. So I think, and Martin, again, obviously can speak to it as well, but I think what we're trying to do is just formalize and have that be in the contract. And again, once they stop being a .brand registry, then all of those carve-outs go away and they get the standard registry agreement. So maybe with that, Martin can just, introduce himself, because... and then just talk a little bit about, you know, what the goals are and you know, take questions.
Many thanks, and that's great. I'm Martin Sutton, HSBC, interim president of the Brand Registry Group. We've been working on this for some time with ICANN just to try and get our heads around how to make the contract more appropriate for a .brand closed registry. Now, I may hand over to Brian in a minute because he's the one that's actually done all the grunt work on behalf of brands to get where we are today, which is a set of small requests compared to the original ask. But I think we've whittled it down to something which is sensible, straightforward, practical, and a common sense approach. I think Brian, would you mind just articulating the sort of key objectives and any detailed elements that you think are relevant to the concerns of perhaps some of the registrars in the room?
Yeah, thanks, Martin. So I'm Brian Beckham with Validaeus, and I think in a nutshell, insofar as the registrar provision is concerned, it's a matter of reflecting in the registry agreement a sort of a straightforward reflection of the nature of using a trusted registrar partner as opposed to the current requirement for non-discriminatory access to all ICANN accredited registrars, as opposed to having inelegant workarounds that might be used in practice. So it's really just a matter of taking what is likely to be a practice and putting it into the terms of the registry agreement. And also, like Matt mentioned, we've worked actually for quite some time now with ICANN on language of a definition of what a dot brand is. It's something that's, I think, fairly objective. I think everyone here has had a chance to see it, or at least it's been sent to some folks in the registrar list, so that can certainly be looked at. And I think it's, you know, it's important to underscore that once, you know, if in any event the registry would no longer fit that definition of a dot brand, then the standard contract provisions would reapply. So there's no question about that.
Thanks, Brian.
And there would be a scenario or a possible scenario where a brand registry would not want to be a brand registry anymore and would want to become a more general registry with their brand name.
I have to say that I can't think of one. You know, somebody might be able to put their creative thinking cap on and think of why, you know, .Google or .Microsoft, which corresponds to the Google or Microsoft trademark, would want to cease being a dot brand TLD and use that TLD for some other purposes. But frankly, I really don't see that happening.
And is it? Oh, I'm sorry. I'll go ahead, Frederick.
That can happen. Let's say I work with a dot Canal Plus. It's one of our customers. It's a brand. At some point, it's only a brand. It's only for their use. At some point, they might want to sell domain names in dot Canal Plus to resellers of their TV programs. And so in that case, it wouldn't be a brand registry anymore because the owners would be the resellers of their programs. So they will stop being a single owner registry. So, and that could happen to many people who have a big brand who want to spend 2 years managing the domain name, the TLD, and then say, okay, let's open it to resellers, let's open it to partners, let's open it to customers. But in that case, they would stop having exceptions.
Yeah, but then I think by nature of it ceasing to be a single registrant, single user TLD, then I think it's in that scenario that the dot brand registry agreement is no longer valid for that TLD. And I think that's what's being proposed.
That's absolutely right. That we've crafted some suggested wording for that very position. As soon as they cease to fit the description of dot brand registry, which has been defined or draft definition has been prepared, then it flips over to a standard agreement.
Volker.
Just two quick points, one of them a question. First of all, the dot brand concept, while certainly having been discussed at length in the community, is not a concept that is currently part of the application guidebook and therefore a very vague concept. We have single user, single registrant, but even that seems to be a bit opened up by opening it up to licensees of the brand owner that operate the single domain. They would be able to operate single domain names under license of the brand owner, i.e. they have a license to use the brand and therefore a domain name. And depending on the terms of that license, the borderline between a registrant and a licensee could become very vague. I'm not sure what, for example, I could imagine a scenario where eBay would grant a license to each of its power sellers under an agreement to use the eBay license, use eBay domain names for their products, for their own eBay shops. I see that depending on how you build this, the borderline between a registrant and a licensee would become very vague, and therefore granting this exception becomes very dangerous.
So I think actually there are two parts of this. One is, part of the dot brand definition does include a trademark licensee, and that's actually an important use case that brands want to be able to use. So if Cartier, which has applied for .Cartier, wants to allow, you know, a licensed distributor who has a boutique on Times Square to have Times Square .Cartier, then that would be allowed under this definition, and that corresponds to Cartier's trademark, which they police and they manage, and they have a trademark license. And to your question about the kind of the license, this is the way the definition's been drafted is that the license has to relate to the goods and services that are sold under that mark. So it can't be just sort of, let's say, you know, a pro forma license that would allow you to register domain names for the sake of registering domain names. It's a pre-existing business license to be an authorized distributor, if that answers your question.
Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, so I have similar questions, concerns as Volker, because, you know, there are you could have, I understand it says it could be at any level, but it seems fairly simple to say, to register something and then to start offering third levels out to the public and say, when you do this, you become you are a trademark licensee. And, you know, we don't know, right now, I'm not an expert in trademarks, so I don't know what every single person, what their class, what it is. So yes, you can give an example, and it seems extremely well-defined, but there are a lot of trademarks that are under a lot of different classes, and it's extremely broad. And what a concern would be, it would just be a workaround to be able to just go to third levels or other routes to the public going outside of registrars. And not saying that, oh, I need to sell it, but then you start losing all of the guarantees and the confidence that you have in this system and all the protections around it. And then you're saying the brand holder could just sort of set the rules for how domains work. And to the public, it's the same thing. You know, they might not know and say, oh, this isn't under ICANN, this is under that piece. So I think, well, I'm not saying myself that I'm, you know, absolutely not, but I think we need a lot more information about this, because as Volker stated, I always think of this as the GTLD program, generic, and the brand, you know, this came in afterwards, so I'll let you guys jump in and sort of beat me down if you want, Ben, and you guys are ready to go at it, but I think that's my concern, and just some, I'd love some further explanation on it.
Okay, I'm going to let Ben and Matt, I'm going to give them a couple of sporks and let them fight it out.
I think the point is that we're already negotiating the exemption of Specification 9 directly with ICANN on behalf of brands. So if they do it without this, they're going to have it anyway. And so this is about having a standardized position that we all understand, because the only time you'll ever know about it is when the red line version of the registry agreement gets put up on the site. And actually, what's going to happen is that people may decide to ask for more in their contract negotiations with ICANN, and it might be that more power is given to the brand. So if there's a standardized version that we all know about and we're all aware about, surely that's a better position than only knowing about it once it's been negotiated.
Yeah, I think that I'm all for streamlining negotiation and getting like a single process in place that it could apply to everyone. Please, that, yeah, we all need that and want that. That is 100% sure. What I think the question I had, and I guess this was set, I think Martin, you had sent it around to a few of us, was about the definition of a brand, and it brought in use into it versus some of the other aspects of bringing a streamlined process in, and I think that's where the difference comes in. I don't want to make any applicant not have a streamlined process where they can.
So I think we've also circulated some draft wording to cover use as well. Have you seen that? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, and I think that's the concern that I know I had and Volker had, is that you start bringing in use versus what is a brand. So I think it's a great idea to try and get it. I think maybe it'd be working with some of the folks and about what that use is, and maybe just see what some of the pitfalls could be.
Matt, did you want to? Okay, you're happy. Okay, so Volker.
Just one little additional question that I had when I thought this through in my mind is, why is this even necessary? I mean, every registry is free to define their eligibility requirements in any which way they want to, so they can make it very onerous, if not impossible, for third parties to register a domain, and making it also very unattractive for any registrar to be even accredited in that TLD. They can make the implementation of that TLD very hard so that only one registrar will even be willing to undergo the entire development work or implementation work that it requires to implement that registrar. So basically, this exception, while nice to have, is not really required because under the rules, under the current guidebook, the registry already has the ability to limit the access to the TLD in so many ways that becoming a registrar in a TLD where you know that you will have no customers will be very unattractive.
It's an interesting point, but if I can be completely frank, so-called closed generic applications were allowed under the applicant guidebook. So just like you're explaining how there can be kind of parameters set for registrars working with registries under the current language of the agreement, I think we've all seen that there are instances where plain language in an agreement can be changed when it's subject to community pressure. So this is something that we want to avoid. So we think it's just a more sort of streamlined, elegant way to reflect this in the contract rather than leaving it open to different interpretations down the road.
Okay. Any other input or thoughts on this topic?
Just to say that I know that we're short on time, so if anyone would like to discuss this offline, we're more than happy to be available to talk in more detail.
Okay, thank you. We got an email there from the registries to say that they are running a little late, so we still have a couple of minutes. Are there any other topics that people want? Oh, sorry, actually, Tim. My apologies. Tim had a couple of quick announcements to make.
The first one is really about the gala and the gala tickets. If you haven't already received the instructions or the information, what you need to do is go to the .AR booth, which is just outside of the glass doors towards the hotel side, and show them your badge. They will scan the code on your badge, so you can only use your badge once, and then give you a ticket. But the good news is that the venue has a capacity of 1,800, so there is no expectation that they'll run out of tickets. It should be fine, but it would be a good idea to try to get your ticket now if you want to plan to go. The other thing is, I think you already covered, but reminder that FADI has added this new meeting to the schedule that wasn't on the schedule before, and the location is Libertador AB, where you guys just met with the board, and it starts at 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m., and that's for the community discussion of the Brazil meeting, multi-stakeholder meeting.
So is ICANN offering an alarm clock service tomorrow morning?
I'd be glad to call you.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Any other topics? Yes, Ben, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, but back to that other topic, there's a lot of people walking around saying that the registrars have taken a position on the dot brand registry agreement, which we haven't, but it would be nice to take a position in some way, shape, or form.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm talking about anymore.
Okay, Ben always is good for kind of, you know, throwing it in there and, you know, stirring it up a little bit, and he's now doing a double act of mass, which is kind of concerning. The stakeholder group has not taken a position at this stage, not formally. So, you know.
Well, I mean, there's really nothing to be taking a position on. I mean, this isn't something that is formally being, you know, that formal feedback is being sought on. So I don't know that there's any official position to take. There's no public comment. There's no. I think what we're trying to do. Sorry, I said what the goal is to try to make people understand what the motivations are and make people understand that this is not something that's trying to create a loophole or a backdoor to eliminate the use of, you know, equal access for registrars. Like Ben and I said earlier, you know, we all know what the reality is going to be. The reality is a dot brand registry is going to have a single registrar. Period. Thanks.
Okay, well, this thing about the registrars have taken a particular position, I mean, how can we take a position if there isn't anything to take a position on? Just send them to me, for God's sake. It's probably just easier that way. Any other topics we want to cover in this session before we wait for the registries who are running a couple of minutes late? Is Tom Barrett here? Maybe he's not. Jennifer, go ahead.
There was some discussion earlier around some recent registry announcements, and we were going to have a discussion to determine if the registrar stakeholder group were going to get together and formulate a group response or an announcement based upon the recent announcements from the registries.
Yes, that was incredibly vague and ambiguous. Ben, go ahead.
Well, I was waiting for Tom to come
in. I know,
can
we
do before this, I put him on
can
the
we
spot.
Do this on the list rather than...
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Sure. That's why I was vague.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, then. We are now just waiting for the registries to join us. I don't know who. If Mike, can you ping one of your colleagues to find out how far behind they are? Or thank you.
No, apparently I cannot. There is one thing that I can mention while people are captive here, and that's that you may be seeing in your email today a notice that ICANN is looking for a gaining registrar to take the names of the registrar PAC names. So when you see that, it's the normal process when a registrar gets deaccredited. In this case, you may have seen they were suspended by the compliance team, but before the suspension took effect, they voluntarily terminated their RAA. So we're looking for a home for the names. There are about 9,000 names.
Oh, wasn't there another one where somebody else had taken them? Or that wasn't PAC names then? So two cows took one set recently. I thought that was PAC names.
I don't think that one was PAC names. I think that was a different one.
That was a different one, and that followed the deaccredited registrar process. And the registrar that was going out of business actually proposed two cows, and it met the requirements that we had. So it goes to that step first, and... In this case, I don't think PAC names actually designated anyone, so we're just going directly to the full process.
Right. That was cheapies.com that went to two cows.
Sorry, it's just I follow some of the compliance stuff and I get confused with the ones that are terminating themselves, moving stuff around or whatever.
Me too. If I didn't have Caitlin IMing me this stuff, I would be terribly inaccurate.